The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. And this particular article we're going to see is his genius section. Einstein did what? Silly slip-ups from a few of history's greatest genius minds. It's possible that some people are just too smart for their own good, or that some of history's best-known brainiacs lack good old-fashioned common sense. Consider these scenes from throughout history. Punked by Benjamin Franklin. To give Franklin his due, he made groundbreaking discoveries in the field of electronics. He invented both battery, the word, and batteries, the thing, and came up with the concept of positive and negative charges. But this comes second to Franklin's true electrical vocation, practical jokes. Picture the scene. It's summer 1749, and you're invited to a party at your good old pal Ben's house. You sit down, pick up your wine glass to take a sip, and are hit with an electric shock straight to the mouth. This was a typical hazard being friends with Benjamin Franklin. Not only did his guests put up with electrified wine glasses, they were also spooked by dancing spiders made from cork and string and invited to send sparks of electricity between one another through air kisses. Franklin also invented a party game called Treason, in which players were told to touch a portrait of King George and would receive a shock when they did so. He even adapted a game to work with multiple players at once. If a ring of persons take a shock among them, he wrote, I assume, while giggling like the villain from a 1940s B-movie, the experiment is called The Conspiracy. The father of electricity first encountered its wonders after witnessing an experimental vaudeville show in 1743, and was electrified by the experience, to say the least. I never was before engaged in any study that so totally engrossed my attention and my time as this, he wrote to fellow electrician Peter Collison. Collison had just sent Franklin an exciting gift, a Leyden jar. Physicists had been able to generate electricity for millennia, but the Leyden jar allowed them to store and use it on demand. It would take nearly 7 trillion jars to store the amount of electricity in a single AA battery today. But for physicists of the time, a whole new world of experiments had opened up. Exactly what those experiments were, Franklin left to the imagination. Napoleon's fluffiest foe. History is written by the victors, which is how Napoleon Bonaparte managed to be such a noble man of the people right up until his defeat at Waterloo, at which point he became a short, angry warmonger. Still, he fought more than 60 battles and lost only 8 times, which is a pretty impressive record. If only one of those defeats hadn't come against a herd of bunnies. Pleased with himself at having won the War of the Fourth Coalition against most of Europe, Napoleon decided to celebrate by taking his favorite generals on a wabbit hunt. Thousands of bunnies were brought to a field in cages. Presumably, the hunters expected the rabbits to take one look at their simple bite and run for the hills. What in fact happened was that the rabbits thought, excellent, some humans who most likely have cabbage, I imagine, were hopping merrily towards them. The rabbits swarmed the coaches, overpowering the coachman with fluffiness. Napoleon jumped into his carriage and beat a hasty retreat. Fresh from the victory against the combined armies of Britain, Russia, Prussia, Sweden, Saxony, and Sicily, the Emperor of France had finally been defeated by the bunnies. NASA spaces out. We're used to thinking of NASA as the forefront of human knowledge, bringing us images of the farthest reaches of the universe. But in the 1990s, NASA's reputation was flagging. A new unofficial policy of faster, better, cheaper, and a string of costly failures had earned it the nickname Not Another Space Attempt. In 1999, NASA had just launched the Mars Climate Orbiter, or MCO for short, to study the red planet. At first, everything looked good. The MCO entered Mars orbit right on schedule. It would have to fly behind Mars, temporarily losing contact with mission control, before coming back on the other side of the planet about 20 minutes later. As anticipated, radio contact to the orbiter was lost at 9.05 a.m. NASA waited. And waited. And waited. And waited. 2 days later, the mission was declared a loss. The probe, NASA discovered, flew more than 100 miles too close to the surface and disintegrated in the planet's atmosphere. Another mission failure might not have been so hard to swallow, had its cause not been so simple. Essentially, a math error. By 1999, most of the world had switched to metric units. The one major outlier, of course, was the United States. The probe was run by a computer that measured the effect of its thrusters in imperial units, feet and pounds, but a gust, of course, in metric, meters and newtons. The probe veered way off course, burning up in space after taking just a single photograph. It was an embarrassing loss, but it could be forgiven if they hadn't gone on to make the same exact mistake 6 years later when a test spacecraft crashed into the satellite it was meant to dock with after reading GPS data in feet instead of meters. Despite technically converting to metric in 1990, the agency continues to use a mix of metric and imperial to this day. Ada Lovelace's husband's family jewels. If asked to imagine the world's first computer programmer, there's a certain character you'd conjure. Thick glasses, pants pulled up to armpits, big old pen thing in his sleeve. It's 1953. Maybe his name is Eugene. You could not be more wrong. The world's first computer programmer was Augusta Ada Byron King, Countess of Lovelace, born in 1815. She was the product of a short-lived marriage between Annabel Millbank and poet Lord Byron, and showed an aptitude for science and math from a young age. At 19, she married a soon-to-be earl, William King, who made her a countess, but who was hardly an intellectual or character match. Around the same time, she found lifelong collaborator Charles Babbage, a 41-year-old crank who was very closer to that prototypical nerd character. But all Lovelace cared about was that Babbage had the difference engine, an unfinished 4-ton steam-powered supercalculator, a computer, as you might call it. Lovelace immediately saw the machine's possibility. It might act upon other things besides numbers, she wrote, before immediately predicting the invention of the iPod. Supposing, for instance, that the fundamental relationships of pitch sounds in the science of harmony and of musical composition were susceptible of such expression and adaptations, the engine might compose, elaborate, and scientific pieces of music of any degree of complexity. To her, it was a portal to the future. But knowing the machine would never get off the ground without funding, Lovelace began gambling. This would have been less of a problem if she was any good at it. She was so bad that she once lost 3,200 pounds on a single horse race, which is about $250,000 today. The crowning glory of Lovelace's inability to hold on to money came when she was weak from death and confided to her mother that she'd pawned her husband's family jewels for gambling funds. The ones in their place were paste replicas. Her mother paid for the jewels to be replaced before her daughter left this mortal plane. Just prior to passing, with her debts finally paid off, Lovelace pawned the replacement jewels for more gambling money and lost the whole lot. Who could have calculated those odds? Einstein put the naughty in nautical. Einstein is most famous today as, well, Einstein. He's the Hoover of geniuses. His name is synonymous with what he was. But among the accolades is something else truly impressive: his ability to make strangers save his life, over and over again, and never once even looked like he might learn from it. In 1939, Einstein rented a cottage in sleepy Cotuga, Long Island, New York. He had one thing on his mind: sailing. Relaxing on a boat, he said, he could be oblivious to the world. There was just one problem. He was a terrible sailor. You had 30 people around her who tell you they rescued Einstein when he capsized and towed him and his boat in, recalled Cotuga local Robert Rothman. We kids who were growing up around here knew how to sail, agreed a fellow local, an ex-kid, Louise Thompson. He didn't. Einstein was known across the eastern seaboard for his nautical mishaps. He even made national news after somehow stranding himself in Connecticut. And this salty sea dog never learned to swim, which, considering how much time he spent falling into the water, was kind of impressive, forcing others to be alert to his rescue. But if the residents of Cotuga and everywhere else Einstein was fond of capsizing knew the truth, it might have been not have been so forgiving. It's not like he was doing it on purpose, right? While we were engaged in an interesting conversation, I suddenly cried out, "Achtung!" for we were almost upon another boat, wrote fellow academic Leon Waters. He veered away with excellent control, and when I remarked what a close call we had, he started to laugh and sailed directly toward one boat after another, much to my horror. But he always veered off in time, then laughed like a naughty little boy. Teachers put to the test. Facing low pay, school shootings, and angry parents, educators are leaving the profession and students are paying the price. Excuse me, the pages are stuck together here. Rosemary Kurtz didn't get into teaching for pay or prestige or because she wanted a drama-free life. Kurtz, an energetic 30-year-old high school teacher in Dallas, Texas, with long blonde hair, glasses, and a dimpled smile. Got into it because she loves math, and she wants to share that passion and the beauty I see in math with other people. People like Jasmine, who Kurt's first encountered when she was a sweet sophomore, bravely mixing it up in a class of intimidating juniors. Jasmine approached Kurtz after graduation last year to tell her how she got into Texas Tech and planned to major in computer science, then hovered awkwardly until she got up the courage to finally blurt out what she really wanted to say. "You made me like math again." In those moments, everything makes sense to Kurtz. Her life is full of purpose. She feels privileged. She remembers why she became a teacher. But lately, those moments have been getting harder to hold on to because of issues that have made teaching harder. A big one is staffing shortages. Last day, on the first day of school, 45 students filed in a Kurtz algebra class, 15 more than usual. There were so many students that some had to sit on tables or hold their papers against the wall to write out their math problems. There weren't enough desks in my room for all the kids. And even if there were enough desks, we wouldn't have been able to fit them all in, says Kurtz. Teaching was always a tough job. It's a lot of work. And in many ways, and in too many school districts, the pay stinks. Teachers also need to be proficient in far more than just the subject they've been hired to teach. They need to be comfortable talking to students and colleagues, and also adept at negotiating their bureaucracy. It's only gotten tougher in recent years, as teachers have got to grapple with new fears about school shootings and an increasing polarized political environment that has placed education on the front lines of the culture wars. And, of course, COVID-19 only compounded the problem. As a result, about 300,000 of the nation's roughly 3.1 million teachers left the field between February 2020 and May 2022. About 55% of the remaining educators say they are considering leaving the profession earlier than they had planned, according to a survey by the National Education Association. The teaching exodus has caused states to take drastic measures. Arizona is recruiting college students to teach, while Florida schools are hiring unlicensed veterans to fill the gaps. In Utah, about 15% of teachers have not completed a teacher preparation program, and many are operating under an emergency credential, which means they passed a background check and have demonstrated minimal competencies and are willing to do the job, says Mila Height, executive coordinator of educator licensing at Utah State Board of Education. "This means we have teachers in classrooms teaching kids who don't have all the skills to do the job. This is not a new situation," she adds, "but it's gotten a lot worse. At least there are humans leading these classes. In the rural Mississippi town of Rosedale, geometry students learn from a recording. The high school's lone math teacher is forced to teach multiple classes at once. At W.H. Edmondson, the 1,500-student high school where Kurtz teaches, the administration began sending out daily lists of all staff vacancies and the absences, along with a list of names spelling out who is responsible that day for covering them. Kurtz, who relies on teaching assistants to help her English as a second language, ESL, and special needs students, says the names of her assistants are on the coverage list most days, forcing her to decide between letting her special needs and ESL pupils fall behind or soaring down the class for the remaining 30 students. Lately, the situation has gotten so dire that the school has resorted to splitting up sick teachers' classes and distributing them to colleagues. "You don't want to be absent because you don't want to be a burden on everyone else," says Kurtz, who had COVID-19 last year and rushed back to work as soon as she could. "If you normally have a class of 30 kids, and then suddenly you've got 15 more kids from someone else, you have a giant crowded classroom. The kids are noisy and there's confusion. So when the classes are split like that, not only is learning affected, but that day for the kids, but also now the teachers whose classes they're sent into are affected." Where did all the teachers go? Experts say the origins of the teacher staffing crisis are no mystery. Most teaching schools simply aren't graduating as many new teachers as they used to. In Ohio, the number of students completing teacher education programs has fallen by over half over the past decade. In Pennsylvania, the number of new teachers guaranteed by state schools has plummeted by two-thirds, from more than 20,000 new teachers a year in 2010 to fewer than 7,000 in 2021. Nationally, 20% to 30% fewer people are going into teaching each year than there were a decade ago, according to the journal Education Next. Many economists and educational experts say poor pay is a big part of the problem. In the District of Columbia, a teacher's starting salary is $55,209. But according to Zippia, a job search website, the livable wage there for a family of three is $68,000. In Montana, the starting salary is $31,418, well below the livable wage of $47,000 for a family of three. In 34 states, teachers' starting salaries are below $40,000 a year. Taking inflation into account, over the past 10 years, teacher salaries have declined in most states. Real wages for teachers declined by 18.6% in Indiana between the 1999-2000 and 2018-2019 school years, says Edward Fuller, professor in the Department of Education Policy Studies at Penn State. In Michigan, the drop was 15.7%, and in Wisconsin, it was 16.4%. In some areas of Pennsylvania, Fuller's home state, teachers' pay is still $18,000 to $20,000 a year, the same salary made when he taught back in 1990. In that state, 40% of the teachers, those who are single with one child, would fall below the poverty level. While salaries have declined, tuition and fees for higher education have increased by at least 20% over the past 10 years, in large parts because states have cut subsidies. The National Education Association notes that 32 states spent less on public colleges and universities in 2020 than in 2008. The higher costs mean many teachers are saddled with larger debt and smaller salaries to pay them off. Money matters, says Fuller, particularly when you have other job opportunities. According to a recent study from the Economic Policy Institute, in some states, teachers make almost 33% less than others with equivalent degrees. Frustration is so widespread that last July, a teacher in Ohio went viral on TikTok after announcing he was quitting his job as an early education teacher after 6 years to take a job as a Walmart store manager because he can make over 50% more not using my degree. Pay isn't the only issue motivating teachers to look elsewhere. Career advancement, or lack thereof, is another factor. Matthew Kraft, an associate professor of education and economics at Brown University, says that for many teachers, there's no way to go but sideways. When you ask students about why they were interested but ultimately didn't choose to go into teaching, they tell you things like pay, of course, but they also tell you there's a real lack of career advancement possibilities. He says in other fields, professionals may see a clear ladder decline, leading to managerial positions, for example. Teachers doesn't really work that way. Amy Morton of the National Center on Education and Economy, NCEE, notes that the only path to professional advancement in American teaching requires leaving teaching and going into administration. A teacher who's teaching in their first year is basically doing the same thing in their 30th year, and they simply have put in the years to earn the higher pay. Workplace safety is another issue cited by teachers ever since the 1999 Columbine shooting ushered in a new era of school violence. In 2022 alone, there were 51 school shootings. As a result, 4 in 10 educators say they feel less safe in their schools than they did 5 years ago, according to a survey by the EdWeek Research Center. It's not just guns. Students and parents have gotten far more aggressive. Schools have become a place to have debates about what should be taught, says Brian Schultz, an education professor at Miami University in Ohio. As a result, people in the public sphere are questioning not only the teacher content expertise, but also the ways that we engage young people in classrooms. For example, is it too political? Teachers, he says, be they novice or experienced, are fed up, they're disgusted, they're annoyed, and they really find it troubling for their professional acumen to be questioned. Add it all up, plus throw COVID-19 into the mix, along with budget cuts that increasingly have teachers reaching into their own pockets to buy supplies, and it's been a recipe for crises. It's just been exhausting, says Height. We keep asking teachers and educators to do one more thing, but we're not taking anything off their plates, and they're really tired. Course correction. The most obvious solution to the great teacher exodus is better salaries, and the American public is on board, with one 2022 survey from Education Next showing that 72% of Americans support raises for teachers. In Wisconsin, for instance, a poll conducted by Spectrum News Siena College found that 68% of all likely voters support a state and local tax increase to help pay teachers. Still, federal action to incentivize states to raise teacher pay has been stalled by Republicans, who tend to impose federal involvement in what they consider a state matter. Some states have acted, with Democratic and Republican governors enacting legislation increasing teacher pay. Last year in New Mexico, a law raising base salaries by 20% on average had bipartisan support, while in Mississippi, teachers received raises averaging more than 10%. Offering apprenticeships is another way to draw on prospective teachers. The federal government has launched pilot programs in West Virginia and Tennessee that expand existing student apprenticeship programs and pay student teachers while they teach in classrooms. Right now, most student teachers' positions are unpaid. In Ohio, educators at the University of Miami have launched a program that recruits inner-city teachers locally when they are still in high school, and then provides mentoring, early college credit in high school, financial assistance to complete college, and the guarantee of a job. But nobody believes money alone will solve the problem. To find working solutions, we may find some inspiration abroad. Amy Morton and her colleagues at the NCEE selected 10 top-performing nations and ranked them on the performance of students. The most equitable student outcomes and the smallest gap between the highest and lowest performing students, and the most efficient use of resources. Top marks went to Estonia, Finland, Hong Kong, Japan, Poland, Singapore, Korea, Taiwan, and parts of Canada and China. The United States ranked last in all the performance categories, reading, math, and science. What those countries' successful schools share in common, and what the United States need to consider, Morton says, is a culture that distributes more leadership to teachers, promotes collaboration, and gives teachers a clear path to promotion while getting them at the mentoring they need. The top countries on our list have significantly fewer administrators, she says, but more empowered teachers. Here in the United States, a growing emphasis on standardized testing has led many educators to complain that too much classroom time is taken up teaching to those tests. The problem, they say, is that these tests evaluate rote knowledge but do little to evaluate problem-solving, critical thinking, or creativity. Test scores thus have little connection to the quality of learning, the likelihood of future student success, or actual life skills. But because the tests are used to evaluate school performance and thus determine funding and who gets certain bonuses, they have increasingly come to dominate the agenda. Conversely, letting teachers have freer hand would likely engage them as well as students numbed by the incessant test-taking. Experienced teachers shouldn't be limited to teaching students. They also need to coach novice teachers. But in America today, there's a sizable catch. Because teachers who have put in the years can often request assignments in more desirable and wealthier school districts, the newest teachers often land where they're needed most, the high-need schools in the inner cities and rural areas, where they might not have the mentoring to help them get off to a successful start. Incentivizing the old pros by giving them bonuses to stay in these schools would help the transition for newer teachers. In Finland and elsewhere, Morton says, new teachers work and interact regularly with experienced teachers who can progress in their careers only if they demonstrate their ability to develop the capacity of younger, less experienced peers. At the end of the day, it's not only teachers who are suffering. Their students feel it too. Teachers are on the front lines of society, often first to spot students in trouble. Some keep food in their desks for hungry kids. Crowded schoolrooms mean less face time with teachers. And if a teacher is burned out, unhappy, and operating from a place of crisis, it's difficult for that educator to pass along a love of learning. It's hard to cultivate an atmosphere of infectious joy, wonder, and curiosity when you're broke, anxious, and frustrated. For her part, Rosemary Kurtz plans to stick around. But she understands why many are leaving. Public education is worth fighting for, she says, but she also recognizes that she has a little easier than other teachers. For one thing, I don't have kids, so I have more time for myself in the evening if I have work to do or if I want to rest. I have a strong support system with my family and my union. I wish that everybody could have that. Problems aside, the connections you make with students, she says, the time you see that aha moment when students get it, still make all worth it for her. I'm not ready to give that up. Your package is hopefully eventually on its way. The Galapagos Island of Florida has no formal postal system. Instead, there's a barrel full of notes left by travelers passing through. Tour groups often stop by the barrel for visitors to sift through the pile and take anything that they can personally deliver. Guides simply say slapping a stamp on a letter and dropping it in a mailbox is cheating. Lazy at its finest. Clever ways to get things done from ingenious chore advisors, avoiders. Pulling the right strings. Our kitchen is on the second floor with a deck outside. since my husband puts the trash bins beneath the deck with strings tied to the lids. All we have to do is go outside, pull the strings so the lid open, drop the bags, and not miss. Affair for flares. One night, tired of getting up to fan our bonfire, I asked my friend if he had an electric leaf blower. Yes, he answered. I suggested use it to stoke the fire. The rest of the night he sat with the leaf blower, flipping on whatever the flames needed reviving. It's been our method ever since. Donald Jackson, Parma, Ohio. You've got mail. Our front door is 50 feet from our mailbox. To eliminate unnecessary trips, I devised a mail alert. I fly a fishing line around a tennis ball, resting it atop the mailbox, then wrapped a line around the mailbox door. When the door is lowered, the string pulls the tennis ball off. If the ball is hanging underneath the mailbox, I know the mail has arrived. Do-it-yourself DIY. I live in the Colorado mountains where we rarely experience humidity. Therefore, I do not and will not dry the dishes. Why do a job the air will do for me if I just wait for a few minutes? Her last name is Gravity, Sarah Gravity. That's interesting. Working smarter, not harder. I had a coworker who delighted in finding unpleasant tasks for me, such as sealing a stack of envelopes, for which I used a wet paper towel instead of my tongue. Once she handed me a long adding machine tape, asking me to find how many items were added together instead of counting each item, I used a ruler to figure out items per inch and then measured the full length of the tape. Our supervisor commended me for handling an unpleasant situation well. 1% inspiration, 90% condensation. Walking to the other side of the house to fill my watering can is just too much trouble. Instead, I keep a can underneath the air conditioner vent near the door. It's a two-part solution. The can catches the drip, and the vent fills the can throughout the day, so it's full when I water in the mornings. Reinventing the wheels. Once, while pulling into the driveway, I rolled down the car window and grabbed my empty garbage can to drive it up to the garage. My neighbor gave me a thumbs up and a huge smile. It's one thing to be lazy, but quite another to get affirmation for it. Mind sealed and delivered. I wanted to write it back to a friend, but the return address on the envelope he mailed to me was nearly illegible. Instead of deciphering it, I cut that portion of his envelope and taped it to the address or even new one. I closed my letter and off it went. Ever since, he's called me the laziest person he knows. Now that's a smart appliance. Sometime I push the button to add 30 seconds on my microwave, allowing the carousel an extra half turn, because I don't want to reach all the way to the back for my food or beverage. Now that's lazy. Hacking the humans. As a computer analyst, I learned that when I don't call people back right away about their catastrophic computer issues, they often resolve it themselves. When left to their own devices, people often get better at fixing them. In the bag. When I empty the garbage, I replace the bag with three new ones. And not three folded bags either. Three new bags fully loaded in the can. When it's time to take it out, I simply pull out the top one and voila! A fresh bag is already in place. Make your bed before you get up. I'm so lazy that I make my bed while I'm still in it. I hate making several trips around to bag to tuck corners and I pull comforters. Now I lie in the center, fluff the covers, then use my hands to and feet to spread the blanket to the corners. Then I stealthily roll out from under the covers so as not to disturb my handiwork. The invisible chauffeur. I was getting in the passenger seat and was too lazy to close the car door. I asked my husband, who is going to shut the door? He said, hold on, and stepped on the gas, then quickly tapped the brake. The door closed softly by itself. The grandchild thinks it's especially funny. Channel your inner Einstein. When we first married, our TV had no remote. Some nights I'd be so comfy I didn't want to get up and change it. I'd call, I need a kiss, to my husband, and he'd come running to kiss me. After I'd say, since you're up, will you change the channel for me? A stroke or spin of genius. I was a city girl who married a farmer. One day my husband picked a bushel of green beans for me. The beans were very muddy from a recent downpour. I rinsed them in the sink several times, but the mud was too thick. So I tried pulling the beans in the washing machine on a cold rinse cycle with gentle agitation. Once the spin was done, they were squeaky clean. By far the sharpest tool. My family has a tradition of making memorial wreaths and grave blankets out of pine tree branches. I rarely participated, guess I'm lazy. But once I found my mom and sister whittling branches into points to stick into styrofoam and hold the shape. I picked up a branch and put it in a pencil sharpener and created the perfect point with little effort. Mom was thrilled and said, if you're looking for an easier way to get things done, always call on Patty. And with that, let's slide over to the Consumer Reports. And a very interesting article this looks like, How to Stay Healthy Longer. It's not just about extending your life. It's also about feeling really good in the years ahead. Here are the head-to-toe tune-up that will help. Well past ages 80 and 90, some people still haven't slowed down. They're publishing books, entering bodybuilding competitions, earning degrees, racing boats, and socializing with family and friends who are decades younger. While that used to be almost unthinkable, it's becoming more common. Much of what we learned about thriving in one's later years is relatively recent knowledge. That's because today, life expectancy is 26 years longer than it was in the 50s. And the longer you live, the longer you're likely to keep on living. A baby born today in the U.S. has a life expectancy of about 76 years. Someone who has reached 40 is projected to live to almost 79. A 60-year-old is expected to live to 82. If you're 80 now, the chances are you could live to nearly 89. We've gotten quite good as a medical community at extending a lifespan, says Emily J. Roleski, Ph.D., a clinical and cognitive neuroscience and professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine in Chicago. The big challenge now is that our health span, how long we live with generally good health, is not always keeping up. Age remains the number one risk factor for chronic illnesses such as cancer, heart disease, and neurodegeneration. But researchers are actively working out the very best ways to stave off age-related illness and decline. And people who have an excellent quality of life in their 80s and 90s are helping to lead the way. All this means there's a good chance your later years will be richer than you might have imagined decades ago. There are tremendous potential, says Rogalowski, who studies superagers, people 80 and older with memory and often health equal to adults in their 50s and 60s. While some factors are out of your control, a big part of how you feel of what your life looks like in 10 to 20 or 30 years in the future depends on what you're doing right now. What makes a difference? From the moment we're born, we begin to age. And aging can bring certain benefits, although some of our capabilities peak early, such as sprinting or rapid information processing, others continue to improve. Our ability to produce creative work and develop expertise can grow throughout life. Some evidence suggests that happiness has a U-shaped curve, high in young adults before dropping to a nadir around the late 40s, then rising again. Genes and social factors, the neighborhood you live in, racism or other trauma you've experienced, access to health care and more, contribute to your health span, but lifestyle steps also play a role. Also, getting recommended checkups and vaccines, three factors, exercise, heating well, and sleeping enough, can help support your immune system and extend the health of almost every system in your body. A fourth is just critical to healthy aging. Rogalewski says robust social connections, which are almost always found in areas renowned for having superagers, such as Sardinia in Italy and Okinawa in Japan. The strong social fabric is a key factor in all these places, says Julie Adamanin, MD, a clinical associate professor at New York University's Grossman School of Medicine. People take care of each other, she says. Wherever you live and whatever your life experience or family history, you can benefit from specific actions to shore up body systems that may start to falter as you get older. And it's never too early or too late to start. This guide will help you understand what typically happens in six important systems and how they may change with age. What can you do to bolster them and how to keep yourself in top shape for many years to come? Can you overcome bad genes? In many cases, yes. If your parents and grandparents lived to be 100 and were in reasonably good health, you have a great shot of doing the same, says Jane T. Gavin, MD, a professor of neurology at the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine. But even if your family died at a young age from heart disease or developed early onset Alzheimer's, it won't necessarily be the same for you. Think of your family history as a roadmap that can help you figure out where you are most resilient and most vulnerable. Some gene variations significantly raise your risk for certain conditions. Variants in the BRCA gene make development of breast cancer more likely, for example. And for diseases where early detection can lead to earlier treatment, such as heart disease and breast or prostate cancer, knowing you're at increased risk can point your doctors to biomarkers they can check for. It can also help to determine which conditions, if any, you should be screened for at a younger age than usual. In addition, your family health history can help you figure out where you might want to focus your own efforts as you get older. Lifestyle steps can significantly reduce your risk for a number of diseases, including many that run in families, such as Alzheimer's, heart disease, and various cancers. In some cases, your genes may even help determine your treatment path and make you a good candidate for certain medical therapies, says Emma G. Rogaleski, Ph.D., a cognitive neuroscientist at Northwestern University. Your heart. What happens as you age? The heart becomes less efficient at pumping blood through the body, which can limit your ability to exercise and eventually to engage in normal daily activities, says Scott Hummel, M.D., a cardiologist and director of the Heart Failure and Preserved Ejection Fraction Program, that's interesting, at the University of Michigan's Frankel Cardiovascular Center in Ann Arbor. Blood vessels also tend to stiffen over time, which can lead to hypertension. The more you can keep risk factors for heart disease in check throughout life, the younger your heart and cardiovascular system will remain as you get older. Key signs of trouble. Many early symptoms of heart disease are not obvious, so keep an eye on your cardiovascular fitness, especially for signs of a rapid fallout. If activities you once were easy, such as walking a certain distance at a brisk pace, are now a struggle, your doctor may be able to help. Also, be alert to signs of possible emergency that warrants a 911 call, including chest pain or shortness of breath. What can help? The American Heart Association lists 8 essential factors, including diet. The best evidence is for the Mediterranean DASH diets, which include produce, whole grains, beans and legumes, healthy fats, fish and poultry. Physical exercise, avoiding nicotine, getting 7 to 9 hours of sleep, managing your body mass index, blood sugar and blood pressure, and controlling cholesterol. The more of these habits you engage in throughout life, the longer you live, and the longer you live free from diseases, including heart disease and other chronic ills such as aging, such as diabetes, Hummel says. These steps can improve health at any age and can even reverse the effects of arterial stiffness and lower the risk of heart attack. Rock Lindvalk, this is an example, high-performance driving instructor. I don't seem to quite get the hang of retirement, says Lenkoff of Fort Myers Flyer, a former engineer and Tao teaches others to safely drive around racetracks at high speeds. He also volunteers at Ford's Revs Institute and Auto Museum, though he recently reduced his role there. It was eating into my other activities, he says. Lenkoff, a husband, father, and grandfather, says his busy schedule keeps him youthful and his time on the racetracks keeps him sharp. I have a good time every day, no matter what I do. Your brain. What happens as you age? Some aspects of cognition, including vocabulary, can grow throughout a person's life. And plenty of older people are writing books and picking up new languages or hobbies, says Julie Adaman in NYU. Particularly, cognitive performance peaks at 30s or 40s, says Emily J. Rogaleski at Northwestern. On average, what we see is there is some decline with each decade beyond that. Still, many people are at their most creative and productive in their 50s and early 60s thanks to their ability to combine cognitive skills with accumulated knowledge and wisdom. So says James E. Galvin, M.D., founding director of the Comprehensive Center for Brain Health and a professor of neurology, psychiatry, and behavioral sciences at the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine. That's a mouthful. As you get older, processing speed and reaction time slow down, Galvin says. So it might take a bit longer to find the right word, or multitasking might become more difficult. Vision and hearing, which are both important for brain health, sometimes weaken. And then after 80, your risk of developing mild memory problems or dementia rises. Some super-agers, however, seem to be able to avoid even normal age-related cognitive slowing. You would never believe these people are over age 80, said Raleski, adding that they seem decades younger. Key signs of trouble. If you start to notice memory changes, for instance, that you're forgetting recent activities or events, or finding it hard to understand conversation, or losing your mathematical abilities, talk to your doctor. Do the same if you experience weakening vision or challenges walking and talking. Not all changes are due to age, Gavin says. You don't want to sit at home and let something fester. What can help? About 40% of Alzheimer's disease and age-related dementia cases could be prevented or delayed through lifestyle changes, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. These behaviors, which are also good for your heart, include not smoking, avoiding excessive alcohol use, getting plenty of exercise, following an eating plan like the Mediterranean or DASH diet, and treating mental health issues, and keeping blood sugar and blood pressure in check. The earlier you start adopting such habits, the better, Galvin says, although it's never too late. In addition, research suggested that having positive beliefs about aging such as feeling you're useful as you were in your younger years, is linked to a significantly lower likelihood of developing dementia. Exposures to green spaces, such as forests and parks, seems to help too. Socializing and learning new things, such as art or language, also appear important, according to Rogaleski. Activities like dancing can be especially helpful. Hadman says dancing involves moving with a partner while processing music and rhythm, quite the cognitive challenge. Finally, despite plenty of persuasive marketing, there's insufficient evidence supporting any supplements to bolster brain health, Kevin says. Your digestive system, that's always fun. What happens as you age? Age-related changes in cardiovascular system could potentially inhibit blood flow to the gut and the liver, the organ that helps eliminate toxins from your body. Smooth muscle cells in the gut may grow stiffer over time, which can make it harder to stay regular, says Jean-Pierre Profum, M.D., professor of medicine and chief of gastroenterology at the University of American Medical System in Baltimore. There could also be a decline in the cells that help make the mucus lining of the gut, which may result in your stomach becoming more sensitive to certain foods. In addition, the composition of good and bad bacteria in your gut microbiome changes over time, though the implications of this are still largely unknown, Ralphman says. Key signs of trouble. Two of the most common problems that can occur in the later years are constipation and gastroesophageal reflux disease, GERD, characterized by persistent heartburn. And while people might chalk these up to age, Ralphman says both conditions can be successfully treated in the vast majority of people. Liver trouble can be hard to spot, which is why having liver function tested as part of your annual checkup is important. You want to make a doctor's appointment right away if you notice dark urine, jaundice, yellow skin or eyes, loss of appetite, or unexplained nausea. Other signs that might indicate potentially serious gastrointestinal problems include blood in the stool, one possible sign of colon cancer, which is increasingly occurring in young people, and difficulty swallowing, which can indicate esophageal cancer. Such symptoms warrant an appointment with the doctor as soon as you notice them. What can help? Fortunately, many of the digestive issues that come up with age can be addressed with dietary changes. Eating more fiber, adults should get at least 14 grams for every 1,000 calories they eat, can help significantly with constipation. For comparison, a cup of oats has 8 grams of fiber, and a third of an avocado has 3 grams. Fiber supplements can help if dietary changes aren't doing the trick, Ralphman says, although some animal studies suggest inulin fiber supplements could damage the liver. Your gut relies on a rich vascular system, so anything that benefits cardiovascular benefits, like exercise and a heart-healthy diet, is probably helpful for your digestive system. If you're struggling with GERD, then eliminating alcohol, quitting smoking, and not eating for 3 hours before bed may ease your symptoms. It can also be useful to sleep on your left side or with your head or upper body elevated. Ernestine Shepherd, 87 years old, and there's a picture of this African-American woman. I swear, if I saw her on the street, I'd think she was in her 40s or 50s. Prize-winning bodybuilder. Shepherd says she used to be a couch potato, didn't begin exercise until age 56 at urging of her sister Velvet. She gave up when Velvet died suddenly. But after dreaming about her sister and their vow to get fitter, she began training diligently, running and lifting weights. At 71, she entered her first bodybuilding competition and won. Today, the Baltimore resident no longer competes, but she doesn't plan to give up her fitness routine and still trains other people. When I'm in the gym lifting weights, not a thing in the world is bothering me. Your hormones. What happens as you age? Levels of growth and sex hormones drop. Some of these changes have been associated with declines in muscle and bone strength, more on that later, as well as less overall energy, poor sleep, and reduced sex drive. By the time you're about 70, your growth hormone levels might be 30% of what they were at their peak, says Ann Coppola, M.D., a professor of medicine in the Division of Endocrinology, Diabetes, and Metabolism at the University of Pennsylvania's Perelman School of Medicine in Philadelphia. The hormones DHEA and DHEA-S, which can be converted in the body to produce 6 hormones, testosterone and estrogen, decline by about 20% of their peak by the time a person is in their 20s, or in their 70s, 20s, yes, right, in their 70s. In men, testosterone levels decline gradually after a peak in their 20s. When a woman goes through menopause, estrogen levels drop significantly. Key signs of trouble. It's normal to get tired sometimes, Coppola says. Hormone issues are not necessarily the culprit, although they can play a role. People going through menopause may have symptoms such as hot flashes and night sweats. What can help? Menopausal hormonal therapy, MHT, can be worthwhile for people with very significant menopause symptoms, but it can increase some cardiovascular risk over time, according to Coppola. Doctors should prescribe the lowest effective dose of estrogen for only as long as needed, she says. Discuss the form that's most appropriate for you. Estrogen can be supplemented as a pill, patch, cream, or gel. Your doctor should also check you once a year to see if you should continue or stop using MHT for longer than necessary after menopause, because it may increase cardiovascular risk. Getting sufficient exercises, strength training at least twice a week, and 150 minutes per week of moderate cardiovascular exercise, and sleep 7 to 9 hours a night, can increase growth hormone and testosterone levels, says Coppola. But for most people, supplemental growth hormone or prescription testosterone doesn't appear to help prevent chronic disease or even increase energy or sex drive in the long term. And in many cases, the risk outweighs the benefits. For example, while testosterone supplementation may improve muscle health in combination with exercise, it also could increase the likelihood of heart disease and prostate cancer. Which tests to take? Blood pressure and cholesterol checks are standard at many checkups. And once you reach a certain age, you can expect to have new tests, including certain cancer screenings. But some supplementary tests may be available by request or at your doctor's discretion. Do you need them? Here's what to look for about four. A polypropotein B test. Some research suggests that blood tests for this substance may be a better measure of cardiovascular disease risk than standard tests. But there's no medical consensus on that yet. Who should consider it? People who are at intermediate risk for cardiovascular illness, those with a 7.5 to 20% chance of having a heart attack or stroke over the next 10 years. They might ask about having this in addition to cholesterol tests, says Scott Hummel, MD, a cardiologist at the University of Michigan's Franco Cardiovascular Center. This test is unlikely to be covered by your health insurance, but it should cost less than $100 out of pocket. Coronary calcium screening. This imaging test measures calcified plaque in arteries. Too much plaque can restrict blood flow to the heart and cause a stroke or heart attack. Who should consider it? People between the ages of 40 and 70 at increased risk for heart disease with at least one risk factor, obesity, past tobacco use, a history of high cholesterol, high blood pressure or diabetes, or a family history of heart disease. Some people who are younger than 40 but have high cholesterol in their family may want this screening. These tests are becoming more common all the time, but they aren't covered by all insurers. DEXA scan. These scans use an X-ray technique to check on the density of your bones. They can also assess lean muscle mass, body fat levels, and visceral fat, fat around the organs, which can increase disease risk. Who should consider it? Starting at age 65, women should have a DEXA scan to check their bone health. Men should have this at age 70. It's sometimes given to younger people at high risk for osteoporosis, or if the doctors want a baseline measurement. These scans are covered by Medicare every 2 years for people who qualify. But if you have a DEXA scan because you're curious about your body composition, it's likely to cost $150 to $300. VO sub 2 max test. Typically done with a treadmill or stationary bike, the VO sub 2 max test measures your body's maximum ability to deliver oxygen to the muscles. Tracking this over time can demonstrate just how much cardiovascular fitness you are gaining or losing. Who should consider it? People who want to closely monitor their cardiovascular fitness and don't mind paying out of pocket, it's in the ballpark of $100. But keeping an eye on whether you're able to do the same aerobic activities you used to do, going upstairs without getting winded, for example, can also provide a reasonably good sense of your cardiovascular strength, Hummel says. Your muscles and bones. What happens as you age? Bone strength peaks in your 20s, muscle strength around age 30. Both begin to slowly decline by your 40s. Until that, the exercise can radically slow this fall off. Endurance, which requires both physical and mental toughness, tends to peak a bit later than strength and can be maintained for many years. Case in point, one study of marathoners found that people in their 55 to 60 age bracket performed similar to runners who were 18. Key signs of trouble. Any sudden pain, weakness, or change in function like difficulty with regular activity should be reported to your doctor, said Michael Rogers, Ph.D., professor of human performance studies and research director for the Center for Physical Activity and Aging at Wichita State University in Kansas. This includes back pain, which is often treatable, says Steve Flanagan, MD, Chair of Rehabilitation Medicine at NYU Grossman School of Medicine, as well as joint pain that can signify arthritis. What's the reason to suffer through it? In addition, a bone that breaks during what seems like a small accident could be a sign that you need to have your bone health checked with a DEXA scan. Worsening posture could be a sign of muscle imbalance or weakness. If you don't exercise regularly and want to monitor your musculoskeletal system more closely, check periodically to see how far you can walk in 6 minutes, or how many times you can stand up and sit down in a chair in a minute. A rapid drop in performance on these tests could be a signal of muscle loss or cardiovascular issues that need a doctor's attention. What can help? Inactivity is the thing that's going to speed up declines, Roger says. Exercise can make a huge difference. People who work out regularly can have the cardiovascular fitness and muscular strength of a person years younger. Deborah Segale, 101 years old. Wellness expert, co-founder of Mexico's Rancho La Puerta Spa, a San Diego resident, walks daily, sees friends, gives weekly lectures to spa guests. Seekly is a matter of fact about her doctor's orders to use a walker. I don't think of it as a nuisance, she says. This is where I am. Advice? Well, I probably, and only probably, done the right things when it comes to food, sleep, and exercise. I would say my foremost secret to longevity has been my Pollyanna attitude. My life has been stressful and uncertain at times, but I just know and believe that things will work out. Also, this is a continuation of the bustle thing. Aerobic exercise is important, but you should prioritize strength and balance workouts as you get older. So find a strength training workout, whether it's at a session with a trainer or a circuit at your gym, or a functional fitness class that you can do at least a couple times a week. You can also go to nia.nih.gov and search for balance training and strength training. After all, going for a walk becomes much harder if you can't get up out of a chair or maintain your balance on the go. With any exercise, push yourself a bit beyond the bare minimum, so you'll still be able to get a workout in after any future declines, Roger says. For those who need it, physical therapy can be a range of pain, posture, strength, and balance issues, and prescription drugs can slow the progression of osteoporosis. Finally, consider whether you might need more protein, important for muscle strength, and calcium, key for bone health. Many people in their 70s and 80s don't get enough of either. A 150-pound person over 65 may need to aim for 68 to 83 grams of protein per day. People 50 and up need 1,000 to 1,200 milligrams of candy calcium. It's best to get calcium from food, like leafy greens and dairy. But if your doctor is concerned about bone loss, calcium supplements may help. For protein, consider not only meat, poultry, and seafood, but also plant proteins such as canola, soy, lentils, and nuts. Avoid these. Five factors that can cause harm and lead to premature aging. Smoking. This habit dramatically increases the likelihood of lung cancer, is a major cause of heart disease, and is associated with 30 to 40% higher risk of dementia. Alcohol. Light drinking was once considered healthy, but data now suggests that any alcohol increases the risk for cancer and other diseases, says Jean-Pierre Rothman, MD of the Gastroenterology at the University of Maryland Medical System. Drinking also has a significant impact on memory, and some preliminary research suggests that alcohol may even speed up the aging process. Inactivity. Being sedentary hastens the loss of muscle mass, bone, cardiovascular fitness, increasing the risk of type 2 diabetes, heart disease, dementia, and cancer. Each week, try for at least strength training sessions and 150 minutes of moderate cardio exercise, such as brisk walking. Insufficient sleep. This raises the risk of type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease, obesity, and depression. With age, getting optimal 7 to 9 hours of sleep can be challenging. Sleep meds are no panacea, so consider seeing a sleep specialist if you need help. Processed food. Regular consumption of highly processed foods, such as sodas or bagged snacks, may accelerate biological aging. It's also associated with greater risk of heart problems, diabetes, and cognitive decline. To cut back, fill your plate with whole foods, fruits, vegetables, and lean proteins or whole grains. Well, we have a couple more sections to this article, but we don't have time to finish them. So what I'm going to do is just go here and skip to let's do a couple all in a day's work. Lawmakers around the world have created many laws, some stranger than others. All beached whales and sturgeons in the United Kingdom must be offered to the monarch, according to a decree from 1322. Nevertheless, in 2004, the late Queen Elizabeth II waved her right to a 264-pound sturgeon caught by a fisherman in Wales. Since 1915, bread to clean wallpaper or floors is prohibited in Austria. Using bread is prohibited in Austria. In 1995, the city of Barra de Garcacas in Brazil passed a law setting aside 12 acres for a UFO airport to cater to the flying saucers reportedly spotted in the area. When our pastor was in graduate school, the dorm cafeteria was not known for its culinary excellence. One evening, as he finished saying grace, his friend pointed to his dish and said, "Sorry, Steve, it didn't work. It's still there." Fly the chatty skies. Hi, I'm Captain Amanda Smith. Yes, I'm a female pilot, and as your benefit, we get lost on the way. I won't be afraid to stop and ask for directions. Please refrain from smoking until you reach the designated smoking area, which for California is Las Vegas. I've just been informed that my mother-in-law has passed through security, and we'll be boarding this flight shortly. If you all sit down fast, we should be able to get out of here before she arrives. Most of you have already have your seatbelts fastened. Now we will demonstrate how you did that. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to share some words with you that my father shared with me when I turned 18. Pack your bags and get out. Please return to your seats to their upright the most uncomfortable position. And some quotable quotes. Tidying up means dealing with all things in your life. So do you really want to put in order? Marie Kondo, and tidying expert. If you get drunk and want to lie, you're a fiction writer. If you get drunk and tell the truth, you're a memorist. If you get drunk and want to lie on the hood of a car and look at the sky, you're a poet. Rebecca Marcai, novelist. Marriage is the punctuation mark and the celebration of what you already have. Juliet Lewis, actor. I think when you do the right thing for the world, most of the time the profits follow. Martin Cohn, president of AI startup Cohere. Just as trees grow flowers and fruits, humanity creates works of art. The Golden Gate Bridge, the White Album, Guernica, Hagia Sophia, the Sphinx, the Space Shuttle, the Audubon, Clair de Lune, the Colosseum in Rome, the Phillips Screwdriver, the iPad, the Philadelphia Cheesecake. Rick Rubin, music producer in the book The Creative Art. And with that, we've just about run out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next week, and thanks so much for listening.